The CEO plays a very important role in the implementation of a model approach to hospice management. In fact, I can unequivocally say that the CEO plays the most significant role of all. To take this further, the model implementation will fail or result in something less than it could be unless the CEO leads the effort. Of course, always leading by example, the most powerful form of leadership. Ask the CEO, you must understand the model better than anyone else. You have to know this thing inside and out. You have to be able to see it before it can ever be built. And it's just like when you build a house. You have to see it before the construction people arrive and can make it a reality. It's the same thing with the model. So you have to be able to, one, see the model in your mind. Then, two, you need to be able to communicate it to others. And this is perhaps the greatest challenge. How do you cast the vision, this compelling vision that stirs the imagination, so that everyone can see it? And lastly, you have to be able to ride the assignments and tasks given to each person, making changes along the way as necessary to make sure that the assignments are accomplished, and they're accomplished to a level that satisfies you. And that's right, satisfies you. Because you alone, the CEO, are the gatekeeper or the guardian of the model. You'll have to talk about the model 1,000 times. And you'll have to sell the idea to yourself, to the board of directors, to the staff, the volunteers, and referral sources. You'll have to talk about it at every meeting for a long time. And the more you do it, the better you'll get at it. However, it shouldn't be a topic that bores you or becomes burdensome. It should be something that excites you, something that adds some zing in your step, some steam in your stride. It should be something that you get excited about because it's your hospice's superb way of doing its excellent work, and it's different than anyone else's. The model's going to serve you well now, and it'll stand as a legacy in the future. So when you leave the organization, you know that there's a foundation, there's a way, there's a system of how you do hospice care. The model involves a 10-step process in its implementation. And of course, each of these steps has sub-steps. I mean, some of them have 50 sub-steps of all the particular details that need to be accomplished. But let's go over these 10 major steps. The first is CEO preparation, which we're doing right now. The second is the CEO sells the model idea to the board. Again, we need to make it legitimate. Step three, we announce the model direction, or what we'll call the step forward program, where we get buy-in and people know we're moving into a new space. Step four, we send 2 to 4 people to attend the model training workshop, or the model workshop, where we can make that initial blueprint that they can bring back that greatly facilitates the implementation of the model. Of course, that's optional. Hospice doesn't have to do that. I highly advise it, though. Step five, the model planning with the team. You know, this is where we take that blueprint and we work with it with various leadership people. Step six, assignments are given based on our planning work. Step seven is simply coordinating and writing the assignments, making sure that things get accomplished and accomplished again to your satisfaction level. Step seven, the kickoff or rollout event. This is the significant event where people know that it's a new day and that the old hospice doesn't exist anymore. We have a new hospice, a rejuvenated new place that's going to do things differently. Step nine is the rehiring and retraining of staff. Again, if they're working for a new entity, there's a new way, there's a new model or approach, and folks have to be trained in that. And of course, then there's step 10, which is perpetual mode, basically where we reinforce and we refine our model as we use it into the future. Let's define the model. The model is the intentional design of a hospice culture that simultaneously balances purpose and financial realities to create a sustainable world-class experience. Let's break that down a little bit. The model is intentional. People can feel intention. When you think of an organization like Disney or the Ritz-Carlton, there's a way. It's all been planned out. It's not a make-it-up-as-you-go experience, and that's what we want to create, you know, with the model. It's also the intentional design of what? A culture, a hospice culture, and that's one of the major goals of the model, is this cultural shift that needs to take place. We've lived in this world of imbalance where, you know, the purpose aspects of hospice are way up here, and you can't even find really anything that deals with the financial realities. Well, the model, of course, is to bring this back into some balance. Again, I'm not saying that they're equal, because they're not. Purpose is way up here. Financial aspects are down here. So they're not on the same level, but the financial aspects have to be considered. And that's where a lot of hospice cultures are very sick. That's why we'll find hospices that won't be financially viable in the future. And what keeps it back? The culture. A lot of folks will look at the model and they'll think, well, it's just about percentages of net patient revenue and it's all financially driven. And that's simply not true. The model is about changing the fundamental hospice culture, starting with the care aspects and then backing into all the other supporting functions. Okay, let's dig back into the definition. To create a sustainable world-class experience. Sustainable, obviously, means that we've built reserves, that we have an adequate bottom line. And this world-class experience for who? Well, obviously patients and families, but also referral sources, and the folks that live at the hospice. It should be a world-class experience for everybody. That should be the goal, and that's one of the goals of the model. Now, the model, of course, involves four areas or four principal areas of design work that impact everything. They are team design, visit design, product design, and supporting system design. All these things have to work in harmony. And, of course, team design is the first, which is the fundamental design of the hospice team, including the discipline compositions, the caseloads, how much it's going to cost, how these teams will work together. Then there's visit design, again, our primary unit of delivering hospice care, where everything's intentionally mapped out with the different phases of the visit, where it's just systemic. And one of the main reasons why we're designing the visit is to decrease the variability of care between clinicians. Because you can have one nurse that's super, you can have one nurse that's average. You can have one CNA that's good. You can have a CNA that you just want to toss out the door. That's how much variability in care there is in hospice. And again, if it's designed, if the visit is designed, we can do a lot to improve the overall average of care. Then there's product design. This is really the design of the physical things we use to do our work, things that we use to educate caregivers, patients, and referral sources. Again, a lot of hospices have probably confined their thinking or truncated their thinking that all we do is services and all that. And I'm saying that we can augment our services by being very conscious of the physical products that we use in our work. And then there's the supporting services design. Again, all the things that support the folks on the front line, you know, what is their makeup? What is their composition? And, of course, at the heart of supporting services is people development. And, again, it's a fantasy if a hospice thinks it can go to world class without developing its people. The training space or training real estate at a hospice is sacred ground. And it's important that all staff are trained in the model. It's not just for leadership. It's not just for the board of directors. It's for everyone at the hospice because everybody needs to be on the same page because we're all part of the same care system. Now, as the CEO, you are the culture of your hospice. And a lot of folks will kind of draw back when I say that, but that's the truth. The tone comes from the top. So when you're walking down the hall or speaking with someone, you're setting the example. So if culture is tied to the CEO, and we want to change culture, we've got to change the CEO. So that means that as the leaders of our organizations, we've got to make some internal adjustments. Every time we look in the mirror, we're seeing our problem, or we're seeing the lid, or the thing that's holding our organization back. It's us. If I personalize it and look at MultiView, I've worked out how to serve 600 hospices. I haven't worked out how to serve 1,000 yet. I'm going to have to make some changes in Andrew before that's going to happen. And we all have to do that same thing. Now, for the model to be successful, it needs the backing of the CEO. That means, you know, you need to buy in to this whole model idea. And your support is critical. You're going to talk about it a lot, probably 1,000 times, because you're going to continually have to sell the idea that we're moving to this model approach. But it shouldn't be a burdensome thing. It should be something that stimulates you. It's something that embodies really the vision that you're trying to make reality. Now, the model is your opportunity to press the reset button on your hospice. This is your chance to redo the whole deal, if you want. Obviously, there's probably some things that are just fantastic about your hospice. Boy, you don't want to get rid of those things. In fact, part of the model is you want to standardize the things that are excellent at your hospice and incorporate it into the way. And get everybody, you know, rehired and retrained, again, in this system. Now let's talk about some of the key characteristics of the model. And the first is the use of net patient revenue percentage amounts. This is basically our unit of measure for hospices. A lot of hospices rely on the patient day measurement. But the patient day measurement falls apart when you compare hospices from different areas of the country with different wage indexes. So if you compare San Francisco with, you know, Corn County, Iowa, they're not going to be comparable on a patient day basis. However, if we measure them as a percentage of net patient revenue, they start to make sense. The creation of the model itself lends itself to these dynamic percentages. So therefore, if Medicare cuts hospice reimbursement by 2%, the model can automatically be flexed or adjusted to accommodate this, and people don't have to relearn the new measurements that they would in a patient day situation. If direct labor is supposed to be 38%, well, it's still 38% to be in the model. Then there's just the fact that people understand percentages. The patient day measurement is a little more difficult to get to, but, you know, people inherently understand these percentages. And what we find is that clinicians, board members, anybody that works with that hospice, when these percentages are communicated, people can get their hands around them. They can understand what they mean. And if our hospice, let's say, is shooting for a 10% positive residual, people get that. They know that in a model system that if something needs to be increased, something needs to go down. And that's one of the beautiful things is, again, a much clearer communication of at least these financial aspects using a model approach. Another key characteristic is the absence of budgets. Because with a model, if we're operating based on these percentages, a hospice can establish them and use them into the future, indefinitely. That is until the model needs to be changed. Whereas when you think about traditional budget systems, they take months to prepare. They're almost instantly outdated. You know, once there's a significant volume change, that is patient volume change, and, you know, they just don't work. Whereas when a hospice creates a model, it has this system and it can just keep going. Even the idea itself of budgets is negative in many people's minds, where the idea of a model or a way or an approach, much more positive. And once established, the model takes little to maintain. A couple of other characteristics that are worth mentioning is that with the model, there's huge emphasis on people development. That's really the heart of everything. In addition, decisions are made on currently attainable performance that we leverage with true decision support tools. We can take a look at what we're actually able to accomplish now, make some changes, and have those changes instantaneously quantified and displayed so that you can make decisions, again, based on precise information, so that you can intelligently direct resources and energy. And this is just a revolution in technology where we're not dependent upon the accounting department to do an analysis of whether or not we should do something. It's right there built into the system. Another key thing is that all systems, our accounting system, our patient management system, are all aligned with the model, with the vision and values. Why? To reinforce the culture. Because again, culture is at the heart of the model. Now, as the CEO implementing the model, one of the first things you need to have is perspective of where your hospice is in relation to the hospice universe or the hospice world. And you're going to do that through the MVI benchmarking system. You need to call your IT department or call our Florida office and have the benchmarking system installed on your PC so you can see where your hospice ranks in relation to other hospices. It's important that the CEO have this broad professional perspective so that you can create a model that hopefully ranks pretty well when you stack it up against other hospices. Hospices that don't have this broad experience tend to be isolated and inbred, and we think we're doing great, but there's nothing really quantifying it. Benchmarking is important as we're implementing the model. Now, what you should be focusing on in the benchmarking system are the percentile rankings. Again, where does your hospice fall in the hospice universe? For example, if your medication costs are in the 77th percentile, that means that you're better than 77% of the hospices in the database. If you have an area where you rank in the 5th percentile, that means 95% of all the other hospices are better than your hospice, at least in financial terms, in the system. Now, one thing that could happen is that you look at your percentile rankings and they're bad. Sometimes there's this tendency to back off or to resist the model at that point. And that is exactly the wrong direction. You want to face reality and say, you know, this is where we're at, and the whole purpose of this is to help us improve. And that's the attitude that the CEO needs to have when reviewing the benchmarking system. Another CEO call is determining the level of profit at the hospice. And this is important because when you're establishing the model, if you set the level of profit or positive residual, whatever you want to call it, too low, people will become accustomed to the percentages of net patient revenue that are established, and it will be difficult to increase them or to tighten them up. So therefore, I encourage you to be ambitious. I would set at least a 10% positive residual or profit margin. I might jack that up to 14%. Whatever you do, you don't want to set it too low. Let's talk about selling the idea of the model to the board of directors. This is the job of the CEO. And we have prepared a number of tools and materials that will assist in this end, PowerPoint presentation, CDs, different written materials. But the board of directors has to be sold on this idea. The board is needed to legitimize the model direction because your hospice is going to be living with the model for a long time. Therefore, the board of directors needs to be solidly behind it, where it becomes the way. And I would advise that you sell key board members individually before the big meeting. You want to be able to walk into that meeting with a high degree of confidence, knowing that these individuals are going to get behind you and help support this initiative. Another key step for the CEO is actually the announcing of the model direction. Once the board has decided that this is the way to go, the CEO needs to step up to the plate and announce to the entire organization that we're moving in this model direction. You want it to be viewed favorably in a positive light. And in the CEO manual, there's some verbiage that will help you communicate this. What you want to communicate is that now is the time to step forward and bring your best ideas, because in this new world that we're creating, best ideas win. So you want to have mechanisms for people to communicate their best ideas, whether they be suggestion boxes, special email accounts, some form of verbal communication, some meeting or something like this. But the process needs to be communicated so people can bring forth their best ideas. Staging your rollout event. This is one of those pivotal, critical events in the history of your hospice. So you need to make a big deal about it. You need to bring some drama to this event, something that's significant enough that people are going to remember it for a long time. And it could be things like, drawing a line across the room where all the true believers come across. If you buy into this new directions, you could have a situation where you have everybody quit and you rehire everybody. You could resign as the CEO because that old organization doesn't exist anymore. You're going to be the CEO of this new entity. You could have a huge picture with some caption under it about the direction of the organization. You could rename the hospice. There are all kinds of ways that you could create this drama and make this a very significant event. Assessment of the leadership team. This is something only the CEO can do. Does your leadership team have what it takes to implement a model system? Do they have the technical competence? Do they have sufficient energy to drive those initiatives forward or those things that need to be done? These are hardcore questions that need to be answered, because if we do not have the people that can do this, this whole thing is a fantasy. So there needs to be some critical evaluation of leadership. You may have some folks that aren't going to make it, but in my experience, there are always people resident in the hospice that can pull off this type of thing. Sometimes they just have to be discovered and given the opportunity to take something, even a small seed, and make it grow. And as we come to the close of this message, we need to talk about vision and values. Vision and values are the foundation of the entire entity. They are the major components of culture. And the CEO needs to have a crystal clear vision of where that organization is going. It needs to be a compelling vision. It needs to be big enough to attract talent. So the vision thing is important. And then there's the values, the way we behave, what we esteem. Does our hospice value hard work? Does it value trust? Does it value compassion? You know, whatever the values are, they need to be clear. And what we mustn't forget when establishing the values is something about the financial realities or the balance thing that we're talking about here. That has to be a significant component of a hospice's values statement. But the CEO needs to set this vision and values so that it is clear. And the vision and values should permeate everything about the model. And the model is a means to reinforce the vision and values. Hopefully this message will help you lead this revolution. And know that we're here to help support the effort. It'll be a new day at your hospice. You're pressing the reset button. So good luck. Let's buy in and sell out to making our hospice the best it can be.